From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 800-462-7413. Of course, along with your call, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, dirty sponges. I know that's on everyone's mind these days. Anyone who walks into a kitchen, first thing they think about is, gosh darn, what about those dirty sponges?
At last, we talk about dirty sponges.
I know. It's been on your bucket list for a long time.
Absolutely.
Literally and figuratively.
What else?
Dementia. Can we prevent it? We think of all dementia as Alzheimer's disease, at least a lot of people do, but new information out of the prestigious journal Lancet shows we may be able to prevent one-third of all dementia. This is monumentally important research.
Wow. And what's our recipe?
Spinach and chicken tortilla casserole. You know, this is casserole time of year because for my mom, any day was casserole time.
Do you have a casserole even, or do you ever do it?
Of course I do casseroles. Of course I have casseroles once a week. You know, Penny goes, what shall we have? 7-bean casserole, 10-bean casserole, 15-bean casserole. But this is spinach and chicken tortilla casserole. Mm-hmm. You'll love it.
That's coming up. To the phones now, Zorba, at 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's welcome our first caller, a listener with us now in Decorah, Iowa. Hi.
Hi. Thanks, Tom and Zorba, for taking my call.
Sure.
I really appreciate it.
How can we help?
Well, I'm calling today about my husband. He is 72 years old, a retired pharmacist. About at least 10 years ago, he was put on Lipitor, 40 milligrams. And over the last 2 years, he has muscle weakness and just tiredness in his legs. And what I am noticing is if he has to stand, he's leaning against something, or he would prefer to sit. And when he walks, he has kind of a hesitant gait. Now, doing some research, we see that it does pop up that this is a side effect of Lipitor.
Sure.
But our physician, our local physician, absolutely discounts this, and he tells him that he is just getting older, and this is part of getting older. But we are unwilling to accept that.
Of course.
Yeah.
In other words, getting older means at 72 years of age, you're supposed to lean on things so you don't stand up. That is ridiculous.
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
There's something going on here. So my question is, can this be diagnosed?
Okay, so statins are great drugs, and
if
they're put on for a reason, you know, for a purpose, they have sort of a, that means they've gone to a higher bar. In other words, we use them for primary prevention for somebody who doesn't have anything, but he obviously had a full workup. Maybe it was muscular chest pain, but it was clearly he didn't have a heart attack, so he was on it. So let's make that as an assumption.
Okay.
Next step is, are muscle aches and pains and weakness a common side effect of statins? And the answer is absolutely 100% yes. So if your doctor goes, no, his muscle weakness is due to getting old, you're not going to the right doctor. I mean, that's not the right doctor, because the answer is, wait a minute, you're automatically discounting what we know is a common side effect of Lipitor? Please, give me a break. We know it's a common side effect of all the statins, and the real question is, can he tolerate another statin? How do we do it? Can we finesse it? Can we actually work with both? That's the answer. The only way to know, first of all, you can't know absolutely that it's from the statin.
Right.
But you've got to do a little experimentation. And with that, you can reasonably find out if it's a statin. So one recommendation I have, first of all, does he have any other problems, medical problems, other than he feels weak?
No.
Mm-hmm. He has muscle aches? Does he have a lot of muscle aches?
Nope. It's just weakness and fatigue in his legs.
Okay. So aching is the most common side effect of statins.
Right.
Their muscle.
And he denies that.
Mm-hmm. He didn't. Well, and he's a pharmacist. He should know it. You said he denies that. Is that the implication of you think he has it, but he doesn't complain? Is he a non-complainer?
Oh, he is a non-complainer. It's taken me a year to get this out of him.
Yeah, well, you know, you can't always trust men, you know, when it comes to complaining. Tom is laughing and smiling right now, thinking about that. So one way to find out that I tell people to do is you go on the statin, you go off the statin. You go on the statin, you go off the statin. You do it a few times. 1 week on, 1 week off. 1 week on, 1 week off, to see if that will make a difference. Sometimes that'll give you the answer. Another way to give the answer is you reduce the dose. So if he's on 80, you try 40, you try 20, you try 10. And if that doesn't work, because sometimes, and once again, you give it a few weeks, because sometimes it's a dose response to the statin that he's on. Sometimes taking the statin every other day is another way to get rid of the side effects, because some people tolerate it, especially they take it at night every other day in a low dose, and they can get the benefit of it on a very tiny dose, so they're still getting some benefit from the statin. And the final thing is going to other statins. So he's on Lipitor, you try simvastatin, Provacol, Levostatin. There are five different statins, basically, that we use. And sometimes one statin will do it, but another statin doesn't. And I think since he has known cardiovascular disease because he had some narrowing, it's worth trying all of those things to see if that's the case. But I want to come to something else that's even more important. Let's make an assumption the statin is not what's making him weak. Why are you going to tell somebody they're 72 and they're getting old and get used to it?
I know.
I mean, is that the right advice? Or it's, wait a minute, you're weak. I'm going to send you to physical therapy to do a gait analysis, and I'm going to get you onto an exercise program. I mean, you know, this is, you know, that, I mean, that's what you do. I mean, we live in Wisconsin. I mean, I think a lot of people in Iowa think about exercise. Not everyone is sitting down and eating, you know, deep fried Twinkies at the state fair.
Right.
Or in Wisconsin.
I've tried up that.
He's 72. What's his height? What's his weight? Is he overweight?
Oh, he's probably 20 pounds overweight.
That's not too bad.
6 foot tall. Is this reversible?
Sure it is. If it's statin-related, you stop the statin, you get better. I mean, you know, now is there permanent damage? Well, you can go to any website. You can go to lots of websites, not any website, and you can find all of the terrible things about statin. There's a whole industry.
Right. No,
there's an industry telling you that statins are bad for you and that red yeast rice is better, which, by the way, is more often than not contaminated with statins, because the way that the Chinese ended up getting their red yeast to work was by putting Mevacor, which is lovastatin, in the red yeast, and that's how it ended up lowering cholesterol until the feds told them to cease and desist. But the reality is statins are very unique drugs. Other drugs that lower cholesterol have not been shown to prevent heart attacks. They don't work the same way. Statins are very unique. If he can tolerate them, they're worthwhile. Not everybody tolerates them, but he deserves a trial. And also, he's got to get on an exercise program, because if they're not muscle aches and they're just weakness, he's got to get onto an exercise program. And if that doesn't work, he's got to go to another doctor and get an evaluation that's something other than you're too old.
Right, and that was my third question. If we went to a specialist or asked for a referral, what kind of specialist would we ask for?
Internal medicine? Well, first of all, I would go to another family doctor or another internist. Any doctor who says you're getting old, I wouldn't go to.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Take care now.
Appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. 800-462-7413, our number. That's 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, I can't wait. Let's talk about sponges.
I bet you can't wait. I know that sponges are on your bucket list, that every time you wash the dishes and clean up the sink, the first thing you think about is how clean your sponges are.
I know. I'm on pins and needles.
I know you are on pins and needles. It's on your bucket list. Well, the question about sponges is, do you put them in the dishwasher? So do you do that?
Well, sure, of course.
How often?
Oh, every now and then.
Every now? You mean like once a year? Or
no,
how often?
No. Once a week. Something like
once that. A week. Well, I don't put it in the dishwasher. I just clean it out with soap and water. But my daughter, Dee Dee, when she comes in from Seattle, first thing she does is break out some new sponges. She can't stand the old sponges. Not as if they're that old. They always look old for her. Put them in the dishwasher. Well, folks, if you put your sponges in the dishwasher, you may not be doing the right thing. And this was a very interesting study that was talked about in the New York Times about bacteria in sponges. And they took 14 sponges randomly in kitchens. You know, I don't know where they caught it. Now, remember, these are New York kitchens. They may be different than Wisconsin kitchens, California kitchens, you know, Iowa kitchens, all the different kitchens. And then they put the sponges in the dishwasher, and lo and behold, there is a bacteria. And this is on the test. You've got to be able to spell it. Moraxella osloianosis.
Easy for you to say.
Easy, actually difficult for me to say, and I will never be able to spell it because I have some dyslexia and I can't do it. Well, that bacteria, which is really common in sponges and is harmless for most of us, actually increases when you put it in the dishwasher because it's under hot water, which ends up making the bacteria grow more.
Go away, really?
Yes, I'm not going away. That's actually the case. Now, how much does this mean? Well, I know it has meaning to you because you're a sponge guy. But if you've got somebody who has HIV/AIDS, an immune problem, is on chemotherapy or on high doses of prednisone, something that may reduce their ability to fight disease, this may be an issue, in which case you may have to change your sponges more often or use maybe disposable paper towels. But for most of us, it's a harmless bacteria. But for the germaphobes that are out there who are always, ooh, worried, about the bacteria that may kill us, this may be a problem. And there are a lot of germaphobes. I mean, in our society, there are people who are just worried that these germs are going to bother us. For most people, it doesn't bother them. So you want to know what the bottom line is?
No.
Well, no, you don't want to know what the bottom line is. You're supposed to say yes.
Yes.
You're not. Yeah, but you just said no. So I don't know which one to believe. I'm supposed to believe the no or the yes. The bottom line is, periodically change your sponge. Don't use the same one for months at a time.
But what does periodically mean?
Well, I'm going to leave it up to you, Tom, because you're a bright guy, and I'll let you decide what it is. But change your sponge on a regular basis. Soap and water is just fine. When the sponge begins to look bad and stink, it's time to change it. And actually, you may want to change it before it begins to stink, because once
this
it stinks,
is,
it's really...
This is great research for the sponge industry.
Oh, absolutely. This research was probably sponsored by the sponge industry. That's exactly what it is. But now everyone can talk sponge.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. And now Zorba, a listener with us in Pewaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Zorba. This is Mary. I have a question.
Sure.
I thought I would ask the doctor, Dr. Zorba, about microwaves. And my question is, do microwaves damage your food? So does nuking your food change the nutrient value, cause cancer, any of those?
And that, by the way, is not an uncommon answer, because I think we look in microwaves and we go, does this magic? I mean, you know, you put your food on a stove, it's hot, and then the pan is hot, and you put the food in there. But a microwave, it's sort of behind closed doors, right? Mm-hmm. It's in there, spinning around, the light goes on, it beeps, you take it out, and it's warm, and it's sort of magic. You think of it as magic, Tom?
When microwaves were new, there was a big controversy over whether this
was
safe.
Yeah, no, it was a controversy. It was a controversy because people thought it would cause cancer, and it was sort of voodoo. And as I've mentioned in the past, my Aunt Lee and Uncle Art had the first microwave, which is called a radar range. And we've even called it nuking your food, as if this is Homer Simpson's way of actually preparing food by putting a little bit of radiation in there at all. But, you know, microwaves are part of the electromagnetic spectrum. I know you learn this in school, Tom, and you think about it, you know, every day. Part of the electromagnetic spectrum is visible light. And it turns out there's infrared light in the electromagnetic spectrum. Radio waves, which are at the other end, in TV. And microwaves are micro, meaning small waves that are part of it. So it's actually part of the same thing that heats your food, which is infrared. It's in that part of it, and it's part of the same energy spectrum. And it just works differently. And basically, it works by sort of shaking your food. It puts electrons into the food. That's why you see it with high wattage, and it moves it around. So what does it do? I mean, let's get to the sort of bottom line. Every time you heat up your food, you destroy some vitamins. Now, vitamin C is a vitamin that is kind of more heat sensitive than other vitamins. But as long as we're eating plentiful fruits and vegetables, we're really getting, you know, plenty of vitamins. Canning food actually destroys vitamins much more than heating it in any other way, because when you put it in the can, you are heating it, right? Mm-hmm. So canned peas do not have very much nutrition compared to fresh peas, compared to even frozen peas. So bottom line is, no, you're not putting any radiation into the food, and no, it's the same as sort of putting, I think putting it on the stove and boiling it probably destroys more nutrients than anything else. So I have a question. What do you use your microwave for?
I usually just use it for heating my coffee, mm-hmm. leftovers, and actually, I put my dish rag in the microwave to try to kill bacteria.
Oh, you know what? That wasn't in the study. It was putting in the dishwasher. Maybe the dish rag will do. Now, I've got a question. You mean you don't make fresh coffee every day? You used less yesterday's coffee?
Well, you know, if I'm drinking coffee, mm-hmm. I don't like it to get bitter, so I turn it off after at least an hour, and then if I want to have coffee later in the day or there's a half a pot left, I'm a non-waster, so I will actually heat up coffee again the following day. My husband doesn't mind either.
Your husband doesn't. How long have you guys been married for?
Next year's going to be 30 years, and we're going to be going to Hawaii to celebrate.
Ooh, and they've got good coffee in Hawaii. They've got that wonderful Hawaiian coffee. We've gone to Hawaii, and I love bringing back Hawaiian coffee. They have really good coffee there.
Okay.
That is wonderful.
Rudy and I are going to celebrate.
Oh, congratulations. So,
well, thank you. Yes. That's
well,
next
anyway,
year.
Nuke your coffee all you want to. Homer Simpson would be proud.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. There's another solution to that.
Yeah, what?
Instant coffee.
Instant coffee. Oh, my God, Tom. Instant coffee. I can't believe you even said it.
Before the break now, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite do-gooders and backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. Actually, Zorba, we're going to hear from the Bean Police on this one. The following note came to us via Facebook from a listener, Kathy, in Wisconsin. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, the word for chickpea is pronounced garbanzo, not garabanzo."
I did not say garbanzo.
Maybe
I said garabanzo, but I didn't say garbanzo. I put a little ara in there. You know, kind of for finesse, garbanzo.
She continues, "Maybe you're confused with cowabunga."
Cowabunga.
Maybe your hummus.
Cowabunga beans.
May your hummus always be filled with garbanzos.
Okay. Not cowabungas. Maybe they should be filled with cowabungas.
Did Zorba
they the pronunciation police? That's the other side.
Did Zorba misspeak? Legume know how you mean business.
Oh.
Join the Grammar Police by posting on our Facebook page or sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. Don't forget that dot. Uh-huh. O-R-G.
More calls coming up, of course, as well as another interesting topic, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor and Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, spinach and chicken tortilla casserole. Can we do this in the microwave?
There you go. That's exactly it.
No, right?
Can we do this in the microwave? The answer is no, Tom. We are not going to do this in the microwave.
Okay, let's put it together.
So you like spinach, you like chicken.
Sure.
And you like
casseroles.
I mean, casseroles are... Do you like casseroles?
Yeah, I guess. I haven't had one in a while, but...
Have you had lasagna?
I don't like lasagna very much.
Okay. Have you had seven bean casserole? Obviously, you're laughing. That's the answer. Their favorite of soccer things and stuff like that. Okay. Yeah. So start out with 1 pound of boneless, skinless chicken breasts that have been trimmed.
A pound of boneless, skinless chicken breasts. Trimmed.
Trimmed. That's right, trimmed. Trimming, you know, cutting.
Yeah, I get it.
2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big tea, extra virgin olive oil.
8 ounces of sliced mushrooms.
8 ounces sliced mushrooms.
1 mediumly calved and sliced. What you're going to use is the white parts and the light green parts only. Do you ever use leeks at home?
No, is the answer. I was going to say, I don't know what they are. Yeah, it's probably kind of
true. They look
true.
Like a big scallion. That's what they look like.
A medium leek, halved and sliced, white and light green parts only.
That's right. See, good. So if you can read it, you can slice it. That's what okay. we say. 3 cloves of garlic that are sliced.
3 cloves of sliced garlic.
You're going to have a couple of cups of low-fat milk, 1 or 2%. You've heard of milk, right?
Yeah, I even drink it. Two cups, right. Low-fat milk.
1/4 cup of pickled jalapeno peppers.
1/4 cup pickled jalapeno peppers.
Can you say that like 5 times? Pickled jalapeno peppers.
Pickled jalapeno peppers. Pickled jalapeno peppers. Pickled jalapeno peppers.
Pickled jalapeno peppers. Pickled jalapeno peppers.
You got me. Okay.
4 ounces of goat cheese.
4 ounces of goat cheese.
1/4 teaspoon of salt.
4 ounces of goat cheese. 4 ounces of goat cheese.
Ah, you got me.
Okay.
1/2 teaspoon of salt and 1/2 teaspoon of pepper.
1/2 teaspoon salt, 1/2 teaspoon pepper.
And some corn tortillas, about a dozen of them.
About a dozen, corn tortillas.
And then some green salsa, like 1/3 cup of green salsa, and 1/3 cup of shredded Mexican cheese.
1/3 cup of green salsa, 1/3 cup of shredded Mexican cheese.
Yeah, some kind of Mexican. There are a lot of different kinds of Mexican cheese, and most grocery stores have them in a variety. Best store is obviously a Hispanic store that has them. So, so preheat the oven to 400 degrees, then coat a 9x13 baking dish with some cooking spray. Place the chicken in the medium skillet or saucepan and enough water to cover by about 1 inch. Bring it to a boil, reduce the heat to low, and simmer until the chicken is cooked. So you're going to cook it through until it's no longer pink. You can check it with a meat thermometer. I never trust how many degrees I'm supposed to bring it to. Mm. I always look it up on the web, and I'm not going to mention it now because inevitably I'm off by 5 or 10 degrees. But if it's no longer pink, it's going to be about 10, 15 minutes. Remove it to a clean cutting board, chop or shred it with forks, take the cutting board and wash the cutting board. And that's important because chicken is tainted often with salmonella. You want to wash the cutting board, and that's really important. And wash it by just putting it in the sink and wash it. You don't have to use it with your sponge. In all seriousness, just wash it and cut it in the sink. Meanwhile, heat oil in a large pot over medium heat. Add the mushrooms, leeks, garlic. Cook, stir occasionally until the leek is softened. That's about 5 minutes. Whisk in the milk and cornstarch in a small bowl, and then add it to the pot. Cook, stirring constantly until the mixture thickens. That's about 2-3 minutes. Then stir in the spinach, jalapenos, goat cheese, salt, and pepper, and cook it until the cheese melts and the spinach wilts. So you're making really a wilty kind of a cheesy, sort of a melt cheese with some spinach in it. Remove it, stir in the chicken. Now you've got really your mixture. And then what you want to do is put it on the tortilla. So cover the bottom of a baking dish with 6 tortillas, halves, spread 1.5 cups of the filling over each tortilla. Repeat with 3 more layers of tortilla and filling. You're making a tortilla casserole. Mm-hmm. Ending with a layer of tortillas, put the salsa on top, sprinkle with shredded cheese, and bake it for 10 to 20 minutes. You've got this wonderful sort of tortilla casserole. Very unique, very different, very delicious. Let it stand for about 10 minutes.
It better taste really good. It sounds very complicated.
And very complicated. Well, it seems a little complicated. So, but it is my favorite book, which is called Rumen's 20, which is about cooking. And his first, the first chapter in that book is Think. That's his first chapter. Mm-hmm. So his idea is get everything together before you start. Put it all out. Think about what you're going to do. Get everything right on your counter before you actually begin. And it's not that it's that complicated, but it takes about 20 minutes of prep, you know, that you're doing. But once you get it together, this is a really interesting casserole that you would, something you would serve a company, not just your kids.
Now, for those few listeners who weren't able to write all that down as you were talking.
Well, you think they wanted to get it in the mail?
Can we mail it to them?
That's a, no, we can't.
Gigi,
no longer. She was wonderful. She would mail out those requests. How many years ago did we stop mailing it through the mail?
It's been a while.
I bet it's been a decade. Yeah. I bet it's been that long. But if you come to the website, zorbapastor.org, you can get this recipe, other recipes, see pictures of Tom, pictures of me. You can print them out, put them on the wall, think about them. But you can get lots of stuff on our website. We've got lots of good information. That's zorbapastor.org. Or don't forget, Facebook.
And if you have a question for Zorba, you can call us at 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how can we help?
I just had a question about nitro beverages. There's a lot of coffees and beers out now with nitrogen bursts in them, and I didn't know whether that was something we needed more of or why it's there.
Yeah, you know that's sort of the latest fad, are nitro beverages. You know, do you know what the bubbles are in regular carbonated beverages?
No.
Carbon dioxide. That's what they are. And what's interesting about carbon dioxide is it imparts, if you put it in water by itself and you think about the taste, it seems like it's a neutral taste. But if you put it, for instance, in milk, not that you would, but there are whippets, for instance, use a different gas. They actually use nitrous oxide because nitrous oxide tastes sweet when it's added to milk or cream, whereas carbon dioxide tastes bitter when you add it to milk or cream. So it actually has a bitter taste to it. And nitrogen is just another gas. You know, nitrogen is most of what's actually in our environment. And it gets added to it, and it may add a different taste to it, but I don't think it does anything for your health. Where do you get these nitrogen beverages?
Well, we were out with some friends, and we heard about it being offered a lot in like in a tavern where they make their own beer. Mm-hmm. And so apparently they do it through the tap there, sort of like a vending kind of a thing.
Sure.
And then I saw it available in a can, and it's pretty wild. You open the when you open the can, the change in pressure for the can ignites this little capsule that's in the can, and you can hear it shaking around in there. And then suddenly sort of a second burst happens, and sort of like a little bit of a, it's like a head almost inside a can.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, when you pour it out, it looks really overly foamy.
Did it taste differently to you?
Well, I tried it because my friend was like, we don't even order it otherwise, you know, because they go out with people who do these flights of beers where you have five or six beer little cups in a wooden platter.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, we only want to fill that up with nitro ones. If they're at a real brewery, they want to stay with nitro and not get any normal ones.
Oh,
and I was like, I don't know why you need that. So I, you know, like a sheep, I came along and said, I'll try it too.
No. Like a sheep. I love it.
Sure.
Well, it's a gas that adds something different. And I'll tell you what's interesting about it is it has other properties. So my uncle Albert in Chicago, it sounds like I have lots of uncles, but he one time... Uncle Albert used to be in the paint business and the hardware business, went bankrupt in the hardware business and the paint business, and was left with some huge warehouses. And for the last 30 years of his life, became a warehouse man, as he called himself, where he would store things and they would make things. And what was big in the early 90s and late 80s was there were a couple of bakeries that were manufacturing cakes under nitrogen, not oxygen. So they had an oven that was a nitrogen-filled oven, or they would make the cake, rather, and then they would box the cake. They would put it in a Mylar-sealed sort of plastic, Mylar's like plastic, a cake with nitrogen, so there was no oxygen. And the cakes would stay fresh for 9 to 12 months.
Ooh.
Nine to 12 months. And we went there. We went to the back of the warehouse. Now, keep in mind, the stuff he had in the warehouse was generally things that did not sell. in other words, they didn't go out to the store. And he had boxes and boxes. So he broke open a box of chocolate cake. We opened up this Mylar package and it whoosh, kind of whooshed as you opened it up because the nitrogen escaped. And the cake tasted fresh.
Wow.
So it was very successful. But no one wanted to buy a nine-month-old cake. That was it. Because bacteria will not grow under nitrogen. They grow under oxygen. But no one wanted to buy it. Little did my uncle know that that concept of putting nitrogen would, 30 years later, end up in beer. And then they could charge extra money for the beer because it was nitrogen-filled.
You're not kidding. It's like $10 for six cans or something.
There it is. Capitalism at its best. Capitalism at its best. Well, enjoy your Sam Adams nitrogen, and if it tastes really good, give them a 5-star on Yelp.
Okay.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is listening in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I have been diagnosed with a pinched nerve on my neck. Mm-hmm. And is it worth it to go to chiropractors?
Mm-hmm. I think chiropractors do a great job with the low back. I think they do also a good job when it comes to the upper back around the chest. I always get anxious about the neck. And so I never recommend chiropractic for the neck. I have heard stories about it, how much they're real and how much they're not real. But a pinched nerve in the neck, if they're working on the shoulder and they're working on the chest for the neck, that's okay. But manipulation of the neck itself is just something. And I know there are a number of chiropractors that do a really good job with that. But I've also heard stories about chiropractors that don't. So I highly recommend sort of from the shoulder down in terms of chiropractic. And I think it definitely has a place for that.
What should I see? What kind of doctor should I see for the neck?
For the next, so what I would recommend is call your doctor and go to a physical therapist. I think they'll give you some neck exercise to do. That's what I would do initially. Because usually some physical therapy, knowing what to do and knowing what exercises not to do, can make a huge difference in how your neck feels. So I think I would try that out.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you for your call.
We appreciate it at 800-462-7413. Before the break now, Zorba, we love it when our listeners get social on our Facebook page. So let's fire up Zorba's favorite theme song, time again for Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
You ready, Zorba?
I am.
Let's start with some comments we got on a photo Zorba posted of him driving his new speedboat on Lake Mendota in Madison.
Right.
Jim wrote, "Are you fighting adult Titus on the water?" Ernest says,
"Titus on the water."
"I would have picked you as a sailboat kind of a guy." Malone from Logan, Utah said, "I want the mustache you have." And finally, Dave says, "Don't crash into all the other doctors out there." Now a listener named Jennifer in New York writes, "I can't thank you enough for the info on the Misfit Flash. The motivation factor has propelled my formerly inactive boyfriend to outwalk me every day."
Oh, great.
"We compete against each other to meet our goals, and it's fun, even though I usually lose."
That's great, though. It's very useful. That's where the activity trackers can really do something, if they motivate change.
Next, a listener, Kermit, who may be founding member of the acronym police. He says, "Just a clarification, but Zorba mentioned that ovarian failure was a code category of the DSM-10, but I think you meant ICD. 10.
Oh, right. Absolutely. Thank you for being so picky.
DSM is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Psychiatric Conditions, while ICD stands for the International Classification of Diseases and their associated
codes. And wait a second. Who cares about that other than doctors or people in the healthcare professions? Let's really bring that forth and center. We've got to educate people about the ICD-10 and the DSM-5.
It's fascinating.
Isn't it? You can't put it down, can you?
No.
And if you want to go to sleep, it's fascinating reading.
Now this is from Tia in Staten Island, New York. Is CBD hemp oil any good, or is it quackery?
Well, I think for some people it's good. The real question is, what does it do? Which diseases may it help besides seizures and other things? Does it do anything for cancer? I don't think there's any evidence. But it's alternative medicine, and standard medicine does not have a cure for lots of metastatic cancer.
Finally now, Zorba, a listener named Katie in Sirona, Wisconsin, who posted the following about our show. You are one of my favorite public radio programs.
Oh, how nice.
I listen every week. The chemistry between you and Tom is lighthearted and amusing. I laugh and smile along with all the jokes, and the health advice is always informative. It's stuff I can use in my everyday life. Thanks for such a great show, and keep it coming.
How nice. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Let's keep the Facebook love coming, and you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or Facebook.
More of your calls, of course, as well as another interesting topic, and our Medical Mythbusters segment, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming up at 800-462-7413. But first, Zorba, sounds like important research to me. A third of dementia cases could be prevented.
Well, it is important research. And this comes in line with other research that I've discussed over the last 2 years that talked about dementia and Alzheimer's. So first of all, everything that is Alzheimer's is not Alzheimer's. It's really dementia. That's the broad umbrella term. Some dementia is due to Alzheimer's. Some dementia is due to cardiovascular disease, same thing that may affect your heart, you know, too much cholesterol. Some due to small strokes. Some due to alcohol. There are a number of different things that affect the brain. So here's what happened. The Lancet Committee on Dementia Prevention and Care put 24 international experts together. Now, the Lancet is like the New England Journal of Medicine, JAMA, the BMJ. This is a very prestigious organization. And they said, let's look together. Let's look at all the studies we have. And let's see what we have in terms of dementia. What do we know about it? What can be prevented? We know from the Framingham study that dementia and the risk of dementia has decreased dramatically in people who have graduated high school, especially if they have 1 or 2 years of college. We showed that already. But they looked at all the studies together, and their theory is that 1/3 of all dementia can be prevented. Mm-hmm. It is a huge number. So here it is. We're looking for a pill for Alzheimer's disease, when in reality, Alzheimer's disease is only, you know, would probably prevent maybe 8 or 9% of all dementia. We're talking about 1/3 of all dementia. Uh-huh. So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
If you have high cholesterol, statins. That's very important. If you smoke cigarettes, quit smoking. We know that exercise plays a role. If we look at the top three that they looked at, the first thing was education. And that's very interesting because Framingham showed that too. Education, getting a high school diploma and doing 1 to 2 years after high school is the major thing that would drop dementia dramatically. Mm. Why? Because educated people smoke less, take action, change their diet, are more likely to take their pills and so on. So education is really number one. Number two, after education really, is, believe it or not, hearing loss in middle age.
Really?
Right, because people who stop hearing stop interacting in life. In other words, they change interaction, and they stop educating themselves, and they stop learning. So hearing loss especially, their estimation would reduce dementia by 9 or 10%, especially in middle age. That's right. Yeah, you've got your hearing aid.
Yes.
That's right. And you're only midlife. So really, it really counts. It really counts. It really counts for you. And the third thing was smoking. And getting rid of a smoky environment. So those are sort of the top three. But it's really important to realize that all dementia is not Alzheimer's. And there are things you can do, getting your blood pressure under control, reduction of alcohol, making your lifestyle better will mean your brain will be active longer.
800-462-7413. I remember that number. 800-462-7413. And back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Watertown, Wisconsin. Hi.
I, out of the blue, got mites or some sort of bug, and it came on gradually, and then it came on vicious.
Well, so when you say what sort of bug, what do you mean? What kind of symptoms did you have?
Well, I started getting bites on my body, mm-hmm. and they were digging under my skin.
Mm-hmm. Did you go and get looked at? Because there's something called scabies.
No, because
the scabies live under the skin.
Well, I would scratch them and actually find seeds and mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. And then, but I was in the middle of all this turmoil and had to move and all these things. And thank goodness I did move. But anyway, so I threw out my mattresses. Mm-hmm. I threw out all my pillows related when I moved. Okay? So mm-hmm. now I'm in a new place. So I have continued to wash all my bedclothes, keep all my clothes really clean, everything in hot water, whatever, and hoped that, and you know, also wash myself, of course, and hoped that I had gotten rid mm-hmm. of these critters.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to come back.
I have a very specific suggestion for you. First of all, number one, and if this doesn't work, you got to be looked at. Got to go see your doctor and be checked out. So scabies live under the skin. Scabies are not uncommon. They often occur in children, but they can occur in adults.
I'm sorry, Zorba, but these are not under the skin anymore. Mm-hmm. These are new ones. These are little tubular ones mm-hmm. that suck my skin.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to the issue at hand, because scabies can also come out of the surface when you scratch them.
Okay.
You go to the pharmacy. Yes, the pharmacist for what you can get over the counter for scabies. You then take the cure for scabies. You repeat it again in 1 week. That's the first thing you do. Okay. The second thing you do if that doesn't get better is you just wash your bed clothing in hot water, because if you have lice, which are mm-hmm. outside mm-hmm. the skin, that will cure them. Hot water will take care of them. And basically, if you leave them and you don't touch them for a week or 2 weeks, they basically die because they have to live on warm bodies. And if that fails, you got to go be looked. You have to go and get looked at, because there may be something else going on with your skin that you're not aware of. There are other things that cause people to scratch their skin. Sometimes they're external things and sometimes they're internal things. So if that doesn't work, or putting your bedclothes off to the side, you got to be looked at. Because it's not uncommon for people to have scratchy things on their skin, and you need a diagnosis. And you've got to have somebody look at you if the scabies treatment does not work.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. And Zorba, time again now for our medical myth buster. Today's question comes from a listener named Mike. Dr. Zorba and Tom, recently the doctor has been dissing the benefits of vitamin supplements. What about vitamin-enriched bread, cereals, water, et cetera, et cetera? By extrapolation, are they all just advertising? If not, how do we tell the difference?
Well, first of all, vitamin-enriched flour has been a godsend to America and the world, because that's how kids no longer have vitamin deficiencies. So I think that's excellent. And having folic acid is dramatically within flour and white bread has dramatically the reduced of neural tube defects, which were common, because we know that folic acid is important for a woman to have on board before she gets pregnant, because it's really that first couple of weeks to couple of months where it really makes a difference. So I don't dish that in the least. The question is spending your money on vitamins. And it's really for not for children, because basically you want to make sure babies get their vitamins. It's really for adults who have vitamins. And it's said that Americans have the most expensive urine in the world because they're filled with excess vitamins. So I tend to dish them. And one of the reasons I don't like vitamins is then they give people an excuse. Well, I don't eat right. I take my vitamins. No, eat right. That's important, taking your vitamins. If you want to take a vitamin, inexpensive vitamin pill, multivitamin USP is fine, but that is not an excuse for not eating right. So that's my take. That's my take on vitamins.
Have a potential myth for Zorba? Please enrich us. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or through Facebook.
Back to the phones now, Zorba, at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a listener with us in Moab, Utah. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I recently had a new treatment for BPH called Rezum, R-Z-U-M.
VPH. Tell me what VPH is. I'm not familiar with that.
BPH, benign prostate hyperplasia.
Got you. BPH. I got it. Yes. BPH. Right. Benign. Right. Right. An enlarged prostate. So what did you get for? Tell me what you got for that.
It's a new treatment called Rezum, and I was wondering if you were familiar with it and how you thought it compared to the traditional surgical treatment.
Well, first of all, tell me a little bit about it. What's going on with your prostate? How long have you had it?
Well, it's been enlarged for a while. I guess about 10 years ago, my doctor said it was enlarged. So I've had difficulty urinating. Not really difficulty, but, you know, at night I'd have to get up and pee a lot.
How many times during the night do you have to get up and pee?
Last, I had the treatment about 8 weeks ago. So you mean before that or now?
Yeah, before that.
Before that, I'd have to get up 2 to 4 times a night.
Okay, that's a lot. And after the treatment?
Still about the same.
Still about the same. So was it a laser treatment?
No, it's what they do is, yeah, I can read it to you. Using only a few drops of water, Rezum delivers targeted controlled doses of thermal energy and water vapor or steam.
Got it. So it's instead of the laser treatment inside the prostate, it's the name brand of a thermal treatment where they try to destroy part of the prostate from going up the penis and then going through and doing that. And sort of it's a minimally invasive procedure, but sometimes it does minimal work, and that's what it is. There are a number of different things in there where we go up the penis and try to ream out part of the prostate. It's kind of like coring an apple without having to do more. And sometimes they work and sometimes they don't work. You have to try it. Doesn't sound like this did much, did it?
Well, I don't think so, but my doctor said the reason I have to get up and drink, get up and pee a lot at night is because I drink beer before I go to bed.
Yeah. How much beer do you drink before you go to bed?
Well, I was drinking more, but I've cut it back now. And last night I've been having a couple of beers, 2 beers before I go to bed. And I still have to get up. Last night I think I got up about every hour to pee.
You know, if I drank 2 beers before I went to bed, I'd have to get up more commonly to pee. How much beer do you drink every day?
Well, I've cut it back lately. Yeah. It's about 3.
So you mean you drink
2 or 3.
So 2 or 3 beers every night. Why do you drink it before you go to sleep? I mean, why would you drink beer before you go to sleep and expect that you're not going to have to get up and pee? That doesn't quite make sense to me. Does it make sense to you? I mean,
sit outside and look at the stars and have a couple beers.
Well, if you sit outside, look at the stars, and have a couple beer at night, you are going to pee. What goes in must come out. That's Mother Nature. You know, it's either going to come out.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
So 2 beers makes you get up and pee all night long. Wow. Okay. Well, so it sounds like I didn't need this treatment.
You may not have needed the treatment. And actually, you bring up a really good point. For a lot of men with an enlarged prostate, if you begin to lessen the amount of liquid you have after 6 o'clock at night, One way to do it, because you don't have as much liquid to basically excrete. Number two, when you're sitting, when you're going to the toilet, especially at night, sit on the toilet. Sit down, empty your bladder, and sit there. There'll be a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, because the prostate is towards the outlet of the bladder, and sometimes you just have to relax to get that urine out of your system. And that's the second thing to do. But if you drink two beers, two Cokes, two margaritas that are large before you go to sleep, you're going to have to get up too much to go pee during the night. So, well, cut down on that beer at night. That will keep you asleep more.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Zerber.
You're welcome. And enjoy the stars. Moab is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to. I love Utah, and I love Moab.
Before we head out now, Zorba, put on your thick skin. It's time for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from a listener named Judge James in Oklahoma.
Oh, he, Judge James. I've heard of Judge James. Famous.
Oh.
No.
I didn't know you were kidding. He writes, "Alas, Dr. Zorba, your supposition about a water softener adding salt to your drinking and cooking water is not accurate. To begin with, the machine does not salt at all. The salt in the softener tank is to clean the enzymes, not to add salt to the water. And to the extent the water softener adds a chemical to the water, it is only sodium, not sodium chloride."
Right.
And not to pile on here, Zorba, but for clarification, here's what a listener, Denise, said. Zorba, you're wrong.
Right. They're right.
Softened water
does not add salt. Right.
Here's more. Softened water does not have salt in it. The salt is used to deactivate the clay media that is removing the minerals from the water. The salt will go through a cycle where it will wash the media and then dump the wash down the drain. Therefore, there is no salt.
That's right. That is correct. And I've tasted salt, you know, softened water in my house, and it doesn't taste salty, so I stand correct. Oh, well, thank you.
And here's our next one. No, I'm just kidding.
You beat it home.
Are you salty about something, Zorba said? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0826Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.